This is my oral history interview with Wu Ye Dui. Ye Dui, who is a famous puppeteer. I thought we might start with your childhood or your parents. If you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. My father, his name was Upolla. In this country, Wu is necessary, a foreign name, you see. And my mother's name is Tola Sri. And after being appointed as a government servant, he had to travel, you see. He had to move from town to town. So my three of my eldest brothers, they were born in Shuibo, very far, far away from Mandalay. Very far from Mandalay, Shuibo. I was born in Meimyo, which is now called as Pingulwin. That is a name, is Cardinal May, I think, the British officer. So Meimyo means town. So I was born in 1936 in Meimyo. My father, after reaching the age of about 5 years old, I attended a school. I don't know which school now. I forgot which school.
In Meimyo.
As a KG kindergarten. And then my only sister, we moved from, my parents moved from Meimyo to Yamedin, where the only sister was born.
Where is that town?
That is Yamedin.
Where is that?
In Upper Myanmar. She is now in Malaysia. She retired as a professor, as a Malaysian Kota Bharu school, university or college or school of medicine. She is now very happy with the Malaysians. and my youngest son, Dr. Cholat, he spent 16 years in East Germany to be trained as an architect, no? Being an being educated in East Germany means so many things, you see.
It does mean.
And he is the youngest one.
Okay.
Youngest brother.
Sorry, that was a brother.
Youngest brother was born in Chaukse, not so far from the Meimyo, meaning, no? Meimyo, Mandalay, and then Yamedin, and then Chaukse, all in the present Mandalay division, you see, Mandalay.
What area of the government did your father work in?
I forgot his position. I forgot his post.
Right. But how many children were there?
Altogether, I have four brothers.
Oh, four brothers. Okay.
Four brothers and one sister. The eldest one, he served as an ambassador of the Myanmar to the United States during the reign of Carter or something. I forgot which president of the United States. And the second one, he also spent about 16 years in Scotland.
Goodness.
Learning marine architecture and marine engineering. He is now very strange brother, you see. He spent 16 years in England, Scotland, without getting married to an English woman. But he came back and served as a governmental shipping company. Yeah, but he went to Japan to get four ships ordered by the government. And he spent only 3 months in Japan. And he got married to a Japanese woman. Very funny. So, and then...
And they live here?
Though, Now he's living in Singapore with his, he has two children, one boy and one girl. They are all doing fine, you see, they are rich. But I must tell you that I'm the only flagship of our family, because I hate education. I just wish, did not wish to learn, you see. But I somehow or other, I was matriculated. In about 1950, I even forgot the year when I was matriculated, sure. You see. So I was just matriculated. I attended one of the colleges in Yangon, Rangoon, but not without success. You know?
Can you go back to your childhood? Any memories of your childhood?
Oh, my childhood days was a very, unfortunate or very sad thing for my parents, you see. Because when the war broke out in 1942 or 43 in this country, the Second World War spread to this Burma. And at that time, my parents were in Shwebo, near Kambalu. Shwebo, about 70 miles from Shwebo. Kambalu, there's a very small town. There, my very famous writer by the name of Thepa Mawa, U Saintin, his name, he is a higher official than my father, and they were in Kambalu at that time, and they disagreed, because U Saintin, the famous writer, he wished to go to the south, whereas my father wished to go north. To avoid the Japanese, and also to move to a safer place.
For the children, the family.
So, you think of it, our parents with six children to look after, and then at that time, my uncle and his family were with him in Kambalu, and also with his Kambalu family. Kambalu born Utemaun and his family were there. But my uncle's family and Utemaun's family, they sided with my father. They were, what do you call? They wish not they did not wish to follow U Saintin
south.
Yeah. No. U Saintin was fortunately killed. His the whole family. Because the people in that area, they thought U Saintin has he had in his possession the government's millions and millions of rupees, you see, in those days. They thought too much of U Saintin, you see. And U Saintin ordered about 15 bullock carts, and they went to another place, a destination unknown, you see, and that place. On the way, it was when it was dark, stayed at a small pavilion or something, wayside pavilion, rest house, and there, when they were, the whole family, they were killed.
By dacoits.
By dacoits. Let us say that the Bunukats people, they were all dacoits. They have guns, you see, though they killed.
And they thought he had a lot of money, but he...
Yeah, I do not know. But my father was lucky.
went north?
Because not as an example.
Yeah, okay.
South and north, and then we we moved southward, where we resided at Chaung means a place where the monastery was situated. And so many people and so many monks and nuns where they stayed around that village or what, you see. So we reached a certain Chaung, Naipeng Na Chaung. Naipeng Na is a peaceful place, you see. And then we reached that place, and then we moved farther in the jungle, you see, something like a where the famous presiding monk called Tokhaung Seador, or presiding priest. Recited there, you see. When we reached that Tokhaung Chaung, it was very peaceful, no more troubles. My parents faced no more troubles at that place, and we were also very...
Did you have a house, or did you sleep in a tent?
No, we had so many monasteries, vacant monastery and vacant places. We recited as a place. It was just a monastery.
So the family could stay there?
Yes. So many, about 5-6 families from Upper Myanmar, they were also recited there.
So there's no school or anything?
No school, but we attended at that. Then the Japanese came.
Oh.
But we were lucky because the Japanese did not harm us. And a very strange place was that Chaung, that place, a village of monasteries, was full of wild fowls, you see. They could easily kill them, they could easily cook them and eat them, you see. The Japanese, they just aim and die, bang, and then the fowls they kill. And one of the Japanese sergeants by the name of Mr. Hattori, he learned Burmese from my father. And after the war, he was appointed as a professor of Burmese at the Osaka University.
Goodness gracious.
And then when the war was over in about 1945, my father was served an officer, not high or not very low officer. Let us say...
What, in the military?
No, just government servant.
Government servant, yeah.
At Sagaing.
Sagaing
and Sagaing Hills are very famous,
yeah.
Sagaing Hills and Sagaing Chaung's monasteries are famous. And you were posted there, Sagaing, serving as an officer. At that time, in 1946, I think, there was a pagoda called Pongyachin on top of a hill, Sagaing Hills. Pongyachin pagoda was situated on top of the hill, but due to the lack of electricity and some other means, you see, all the pagoda festival was held under the, at the foot of the hill. At that time, I saw my father took the three of us, four of us, the eldest ones, the eldest three and me, to the pagoda festival. And there, not according to the tradition, you see, because all dramatic performances or what you call puppet shows were given at night, were performed in nighttime. But at that time, according to various, I'm not so sure, according to various circumstances, the Pagoda Festival was held at the foot of the pagoda, under the hill. So there I saw the dramatic performance with a huge cutout figure of the white elephant. I think the theatrical actors was Sri Mantima, very famous one, who performed that play, Vaisandara, one of the great Jatakas, you see. He was performing with a huge cut-out figure of a white elephant. He was a generous king, you see. He gave so many things, even his children to Brahmins, that sort of story. And also, I also saw a puppet performance in which I saw the villain puppet kicking the prince puppet in the kowtow position, something like this, begging him not to kill him or torturing him, you see, torture him, you see. He kicked so hard that the prince puppet fell backwards, you see. Let us say somersaulted backwards, and it fell about 1 yard from the original place in the same kowtow position, you see. I was really surprised. So before the war, I liked the music very much. I heard the music being played from the radio, the PBS, Burma Broadcasting Service. And also, my father had a collection of records, and I heard from the gramophone, or you can say phonograph. I heard the, what you call, drum circle, great maestro, Saint Peter's music, and so I liked them. But on seeing the dramatic show and the puppet show, I fell in love with the.
It changed your life.
But
it changed your
life. Not actually, not yet, because I fell in love with the Burmese orchestra music, traditional orchestra music.
Had you ever seen a show like that
before?
No,
not before. Not
that's
before.
The first
no,
time.
No, no, yeah. And also, I fell in love with the sad drama, and also with the Yogte puppet show. And then there was a famous pagoda, Nataji, in that town, you see, Sakai. And every year the pagoda festival was held annually by that pagoda first trustees, you see. And my aunt, Dotami was her name, she likes dramatic shows very much. And she took me to the Sakai Ngatati Pagoda Festival every year. About, I think, three or 4 years, I don't know, I'm not sure. She took me there, and always the Sri Mantimaun, the great Sri Mantimaun troupe was performed there, you see. I like that Sri Mantimaun very much, you see. Oh, I saw his. He was not a handsome guy, you see. But the way he performed, the way he delivered his dramatic speeches, very attractive, you see. Very, very. I found him very great, you see. A great artist.
And you're only 11 or 12 then, right? Something like that?
About 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I fell in love with Pues, you see. Pues means any kind of entertainment, orchestra's entertainment, or sad, dramatic entertainment, and yogte, and everything. And we also have a nyeng. And India is like a devoted to the singing and dancing of female dancers, female artists, and the two or four comedians. They sing, the female artists, they sing and they dance, let us say, they entice, no? They were seductive. The way they speak, the way they sang, and the way they dance all look seductive to the spectators, particularly the male spectators. Also, the female spectators also like them because they must learn how to make their husbands love them. And then the orchestra. Our orchestra is very much different from the Western orchestra, because the orchestral musicians, they played, and we have the right to improvise. Myanmar is the only country where performing artists have the right to improvise. The actors, actresses, the singers, the musicians, they have the right to improvise. Improvisation means extemporization. Right. That is a very strange thing, you see. Yeah. We have the right to improvise.
It could be different
even,
every night.
Even a not so performing artist who had not learned the proper the art, they knew how to improvise, and they knew how to make the spectators like them. In that way, very funny for us, and very strange for our performing arts, you see. So they had the right to improvise. You can learn the art of singing in a way, as your teacher taught you, but you may improvise. A singer may improvise, and then you may learn the art of dancing from someone, from a teacher, but you have the right to improvise. Very singing, dancing, and playing of music.
So this all had
very strange thing.
This all had a big impact on you as a young boy.
Yes. So I really fell in love with the performing arts.
There's no musical ability or a dramatic ability elsewhere in the family?
No. Well, my father played the piano and also the violin. I mean the Western violin.
Was that unusual at that time for Burmese to...
But very strange for him, you see. We from Sakai, we moved to about a year to Pakoku, and then to Pakoku to we moved to Mandalay, and then we moved from Mandalay to Tathong, Lower Myanmar. Tathong is in the present Mon State, you see. And as a district commissioner, my father, his first post as a district commissioner, we call it in DC, in the town.
But that's quite a senior position.
At that time,
yeah.
District manager, district commissioner.
Yeah, it's an important job.
But above him, the commissioner.
British.
No. Or Myanmar was. My people were appointed as high posts at that time, not during the pre-war days, you see. So in the town, there was the house of the built for the district commissioner post people. There was a piano. Without touching the piano for many years, you see. He began to play it on the piano, the classical music. Nama classical ones. I was surprised. And then I also tried my hands at the piano, and he gave me a, what he called a Burmese music notes written by Wu Sangwen, but not in a what you call stuff notation, but in very church, you see. It is written in church system. See, began with a two lines, very close line. F with a what you call wavy line. like that. I played it well, and I learned how to, and in about.
With no lessons or?
No, not without teachers.
You had no teacher?
No. My father just taught me how to read that old system, not system, invented by one Wu Sangwen during the pre-war days. Wu Sangwen system of chat notation. And I played the classical ones, you see. And then my father moved to, when he was serving as district commissioner in the town, our leaders were assassinated. All of them were assassinated. And then we moved from the town to Molumyang. Molumyang,
yeah,
in the British English way, you pronounce Molumyang, Molumyang or something.
Yeah.
Not mean, M-Y is not possible for you, I think. Molumyang, you just add your, what do you call it? So Molumyang, in Molumyang, the independence was granted. My father and his superior commissioner, and they celebrated the Independence Day celebrations in Molumyang. And then, after serving for about 2 years in Molumyang, in 1950, my father moved from Molumyang to Yangon.
Transferred again.
Yeah.
I don't think I've interviewed anyone who's moved so many times.
Yeah. Being a government servant, it's a must for them to move from place to place. And then he served as a secretary of the Ministry of the present Kayah State. In those days, Kayah State was called Karani State. Karen means red Karen, you see. Karenis and Karenza, they are almost the same, see. So he served as the secretary of the Ministry of the Kayah Karenis State.
Right.
And then at that time, the UNU was our
Prime Minister.
And then when the Ministry of Culture was established, he was given the post of the first secretary of the Ministry of Culture in 1952. In 1952, the Ministry of Culture was established, you see. And then, at that time, then I began to. I firstly learned in the proper way. I learned the classical music, playing on the piano, by a famous pianist called Siamai. I also learned the Western classical notation stuff notation, and my first teacher of Western music was a Filipino lady. We were neighbors, you see. Her name was Mrs. Melendez. At that time, there was a sizable Filipino community in Yangon. So many Filipinos. Even my friend was a Filipino. His name is Carlos Melendez. And we were staying at the same quarter in Iamyang, not so Iamyang is now a place of what called rich men and famous men. And we were friends, Carlos Melendez and me were great friends. And then I used to go to his house so many times, and he came to my house so many times. And then I learned later that he could teach me.
Wow, a boy.
But not play the piano.
Yeah.
What go very well. See, he told me that she could teach me, but she could not play very well. See, so I learned Western stuff notation from Mrs. Melendez. I learned for about 2 years. I could play the classics, see.
Were you the only child in the family interested in music?
Yes. Oh, my sister. She also learned to play music from Mrs. Melendez. And then she... firstly, I used to be... I proved to be a very... What do you call? A poor learner. Whereas she was a good learner, you see. She played quite well. And then when I... Began to be a good player, and then she lost interest. Where is my sister? And then I really liked the classics, you see. And then my Mrs. Melendez told me, you could play better than me. I could teach you no more, and you must find a new teacher. And that problem situation was solved by my father, because at that time there were two Mahayana priests, you see. One is a Latvian priest, Mahayana, and one was a Estonian. The Latvian priest, his name was Frederick Lustig, you know, Frederick something like Lustig, very, very nobility sounding name. No? And then my father met them, the Latvian priest. He was awarded the Poet Laureate, how do you pronounce?
Yeah, that's it.
By USA or something.
Wow.
He composed so many
famous
poems in English.
Yeah.
I could give you. If you have time, I could give all his compositions in his English. But sometimes you need you may also need a dictionary.
Even for an English speaker.
Some words are very high flown, you see. So I learned the piano from him.
More. Yeah.
Oh, yes, he played our house used to be a wooden bungalow, you see.
Yeah.
Very bungalow with a 2-4 rooms, adjacent rooms, 4 rooms, and the whole, what do you call?
Veranda or the middle room?
What do you call, the front
yeah.
space was, what do you call, drawing room, dining room, or a desk, you see. A dining, drawing, and my father's office room, and also the shrine room. Shrine room was separate, a little smaller, you see. And so when he played the piano, that Latvian priest, our house shook, you see. Like this and like this. So I like particularly his playing of Liszt, Hungarian Rhapsody number 2. Oh, I liked it very much. I played it not very good. I like his playing. Then he moved from not so far from us to another, what do you call, to a very distant place. Not in beneath the, what do you call, the Sweden Pia Hillock.
Right.
He moved to a very far place, so she no more could not come. So I, according to them, according to his Pali name was Sri Ananda, and his name was Frederick Lustig or something, Frederick and Henry or something Lustig. I think he belonged to a family of nobility family. And then the older Estonian priest, he did not speak English. According to him, Buddhism somehow reached their place when Asoka sent missionaries to various parts of Europe,
the world, yeah,
and Greece, including Greece, I think. But according to him, the missionaries somehow, lost their way, lost their destination and reached Latvia and Estonia or something. According to them, that the Buddhism reached their country by the missionaries sent by Asoka. So, and then, can I continue?
Sure.
Pardon me.
Sure.
And then, but have you heard of Professor G.H. Luce, British historian? My father met him, and my father told me that on every Saturday, the musical gathering was held at his residence. So you were invited to go.
What year are we now, approximately? With the 50s?
And about before my matriculation.
Okay, because 36 you were born, so.
And then before
52, before 52.
No, before 50, let us see. Oh, yes. We have 52, 53, 54, yes.
Yeah.
And then I went to, on every Saturday, I went to the house of Professor T.H. Luce.
And you're the only one in your family interested in doing so?
Yeah, yeah. There were so many foreigners, so many Europeans. Before playing a musical piece, he explained about the history of that piece.
Wow.
Who composed that musical piece, about on what theme he wrote, and what's what called historical background of that piece. And he played that. Professor Luce had two old phonograph, 78 round bars per minute, like that old phonograph, but very high and very loud sounding sound, you see. All phonograph with a phonograph needle. And he also had radiogram.
I can remember those with a
long play records, you see.
Yep.
And he played, I even could appreciate the operas. Not the pump. Other my people, they may like classical music, but they won't be able to appreciate the operas, you see.
Italian or French.
German or Italian or French operas, you see. They may sound very,
strange to their ears.
Very strange and unpleasant to their ears, you see. So I even like the operas. I don't know what was going on, what were they singing, or what
the sound and the...
But I like them.
Yeah.
But I think Professor Luce was quite what you call conservative. When he went back to England, London, and then the rest of his the European community.
Yeah.
They played other lighter stuff, like variety and so many PC. But when he was in Yangon, Rangoon, no, that was not allowed.
Which did you prefer?
No, he played something like Fidelio, Beethoven's Fidelio. Right.
But what did you prefer?
I like all of them.
All
of them. I
so were you the only child that was attending all these Saturday functions?
Yes, yes, yes.
All the rest of adults.
Other also. And also on Mondays, at that time the visiting professor of English, he was a Welshman, you see, Mr. Atlan. On Mondays, and he, the play reading, what do you call, party was held, you see, on Mondays. And Mr. Atlan, he brought books played by Shakespeare and Bernard Shaw and something like that, and all written, all borrowed from the British Council Library. We read the plays together, you see. Sometimes, once I was given the role of a Russian general, something, Bernard Shaw's. I forgot the whist play we were reading, you see. I read in a Russian accent. Professor Luce and Mr. Adler, they praised me for my imitation of the Russian accent.
But you're still a kid, really, aren't you? You're still a child. You're not finished school.
At that time, not yet matriculated.
Yeah.
Not yet matriculated. No. In 1951, I was matriculated.
Okay.
50, 51.
So did you notice any difference before independence and after independence? Was there any difference in your life?
Our country, economically speaking, our country was very well, very well, a very good situation. Economically, family with 500 just salary per month, they could spend like a rich man, not yet well-to-do.
Right.
500 just, you could eat, you could
feed a family.
You could feed a family. Even 350 just in those days, that's very good. I think my father received about, as a secretary, he received about 8,000 chats, I think. He bought a household 12.
Began
14 to... is, household 14 is quite a large,
yeah,
quite a big,
yeah,
car.
Yeah.
Instead, he bought a household 12 for 8,000 chats, I think. Very cheap, very, 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 what do you call? Things are very good in those days.
And you're still not interested in education at that time. You're just going to school, but you're not trying.
I attended school. Firstly, Mrs. Nelson's school. I attended that school. And then teachers training, college practicing school. I'm not a very good student. I never tried learning, you see. As I told you, I'm the only black sheep of our family. I hated education.
And the other children, your other siblings all went to university and...
They were...
Engineer,
They were hardworking. They were good learners. My brothers, who served as the ambassador of the Myanmar to the United States, his English was excellent. My second brother, who spent 16 years in Scotland, his English was excellent.
But it sounds like education for your parents was important.
Yes,
In that they...
Only thing is, I just hated education.
Okay, so when you finished, when you matriculated, what did you do?
When I matriculated, I forgot to mention one important event of my life, because in 1951, beginning from about 51, I borrowed books from my read books, borrowed from the USIS, United States Information Service Library, and also British Council Library.
Yeah.
And then puppetry somehow or other came into my mind, you see. So I read books on puppetry, and then I really wished to become a professional puppeteer. The book on puppetry entitled Marionettes, A Hobby for Everyone, written by Mabel and Les Beaton, American puppeteers. I think they were not professional, I think. I really recall my enthusiasm in puppetry.
And you knew that was where you were going to?
Yes. I've read so many books on puppetry, and then at that time, one of my friends, he was a Hmong nationality, he was a sculptor, and he stayed at my house. With his assistance, I began to make experimented with the foreign types of puppetry, shadow, glove, and rod, and also the string type. He made puppets for me, and then I experiment manipulating them. And then,
what did your parents think about this? That you were crazy?
No. And here I must change my subject. My father told me that he met the American ambassador, and if I wished, I was supposed to go to America and learn music. I did not go there. I was such a foolish and stupid and stubborn fellow, you see, when I was young. My father told me that, you are a strange boy, because you did not know how to do things which are right, what are good, but he told me that instead you wish to do things which are not inappropriate, something like that. My mother told me so many times about me, you see. What you do, something like this, you see. And then I learned from a puppeteer the art of string puppetry in a beginning from about 1963. I learned the art of string puppet manipulation, and then I forgot to tell you that my father, and then after about a year later, he told me that he was going to send me to Moscow Conservatory. I did not go there. I was such a
you
stupid
refused to
man.
Go. You refused to go.
Yes, I did. And then, lastly, when he knew that I was interested in puppetry, he told me he met a Czechoslovak ambassador, and I could go to Prague to learn puppetry. I did not go there. No, I was such a stupid man. I was such a stupid and useless fellow in those days. You see. And then, in 1965, when our military man, Air Force,
Not Nay Wen.
Not Nay Wen.
He was 62.
His name was Tong Dan, Air Force Commodore
or whatever.
At that time he was serving as a Minister of Culture. And he went to Perak and he invited he requested the Czech government to send two puppeteers to Yangon, and teach the what you call international puppet arts to us. And in 1965, two lady Czechoslovak puppeteers by the name of Dr. Eva Fortiskova and Mrs. Jana Havlíková.
My goodness.
They came to Yangon, Rangoon, and they conducted 3 months long puppet training course. And I was one of the 9, students who attended that course. My interest in theoretical puppet interest turned into practical interest, you see. At the suggestion of the two Czech lady puppeteers, the government, the Ministry of Culture, formed a sort of practicing puppet troupe,
right,
with me as a leader. And then...
You're still quite young, aren't you? You're only in
1965.
Yeah.
And then I was given the leader of that,
yeah,
duty of leading that troop,
yeah,
with eight pupils of the,
yeah,
two Czech. Eldest one was very old. He was from Mendeley, so he was not included. And I wrote plays and we made puppets together. There were two women members, and we all made the puppets together, and I wrote the plays, and we performed as above 30 schools in Yangon.
How did you survive?
20, at least 20.
You went to all the different schools. But who paid you to do this?
We were given monthly salary for the 150 charge for the rest of the members of the little practicing troupe, and me 300. So we performed so many, very successful.
And if you'd been working as a civil servant at that time, would you have earned?
Only for a year. And then in 1965, my father died. Died of hemorrhage.
Okay, Brian.
How do you pronounce?
Hemorrhage.
Hemorrhage.
Yeah.
Yes. He died of hemorrhage.
Because you were then, you were just younger than 30.
That was in 1965.
Almost 30.
I
29.
And then?
You were 29 then.
Yes. And then we performed at about 20 schools, moving from one. A portable stage was built for us.
You designed it, or?
And yes. Oh no. One of the East German Ritani. He was a stage architect.
Oh, wow.
He designed quite light, but not portable in the real sense.
Yeah.
You see? But so many things, and dance and drama department gave us the lighting and sound equipment. You see, and we used the sound equipment and lighting equipment provided by the Dance and Drama Troupe of the Music Award Corps, Cultural Ministry. It was a great success. And then when my father died in 1966, and then I retired from that troupe. And retirement is not a very good word, you see?
No.
What do you call? that troupe was disbanded.
Right.
Well, without my leadership, without my, what do you call?
If you weren't there.
No. Then I went out from that troupe. With my mother's permission, in a way, my father won't allow me to form a troupe, you see. But with my mother's permission, I founded a troupe. Founded, directed, and managed my own troupe.
Amazing.
The Go Out Marionette Troupe. Firstly, I use a portable stage. Oh, I must tell you, I'm a bit of an electrician, you see. I experimented with a. I did not knew It was the water dimmers were invented many years ago in the United States and other countries, even in Australia or England. I did not know. Only after many years I found out in the old books on theater that. But I invented this inventory. I invented the water dimmers. Firstly, I tried the plastic bucket and the one electrode at the bottom of the bucket.
Yeah.
And one wire serving as another electrode.
Yeah.
And I poured water in that. And then I added a little salt. And then I tried with that, table lamp. It worked well. You see?
Yeah.
It worked very well. Water timbers. When the bark suddenly was a little red at that time, firstly, and then it turned yellow, and then white. Oh, it was wonderful. I was very glad and happy, you see? And then my first performance was given in Pimana, the present
yes.
In Naypyidaw.
Yeah.
At that time, no Naypyidaw, only Pimana. My first show, my performance. Before my performance, my friend was a Pimana born. He was born in Pimana, and he took me to Pimana. His name was Win Nai, also Win Sui. He told me, I asked him whether there was a ceramic industry in Pimana. He told me one. I went to see that ceramic man, you see. He told me he was also a matriculator, you see. And I asked him to make six ceramic tubes, you see, with a diameter about 8 inches inside diameter, with a hole on the top of it, and about 18 inches long. All must be glazed inside out.
Yeah.
You see? And he made eight ceramic, cylinders? For me. And when I reached Pimana, I went to fetch those porcelain things, ceramic things, and I built a box, ordinary wooden box.
Right.
I placed them with
dividers.
Not to move Why transportation?
Yeah.
From when moving from one place to another?
Yeah.
Not to move.
Yeah.
Or not to make
raffle
them
and,
crash. So I put what you call wooden partition, and from Yangon I bought about six copper or brass tubings used for cutting.
Uh-huh.
Cutting, hanging. I took them to Gemina. I put wooden handles to them, and then I made a what you call very very efficient and very really working water timbers. Before the show is to begin, before the show, the house lights must be slowly dimmed. And that the orchestra, when the orchestra plays the appropriate music, the house light was showed slowly to 1,000 watt bulbs. Many big bulbs. Slowly dim, and then with the end of the music, all the dim up, you see? And then the first item was the when the Buddha attained enlightenment. There was a song written by the famous composer in the Rewatis.
Right.
His name was Svidanyo. After the first introductory verse, the cutting was raised. And then you could see the Buddha with a halo revolving at his back, you see? The Buddha on the throne, and with you could please imagine the leaves are what called? With nets, you see? Nets.
Yes.
Attached to the nets, leaves. And then the banyan, tree. And then at the back of the Buddha's head, it was a plywood, cut out Buddha. The 1-3-volt or 6-volt bulb was attached, see? Take to the back. And it was attached, connected to the transformer,
right.
6-volt transformer. And then the bulb was and I also used a small reflector of the flashlight.
Right.
That's very hot call. Very, very beautiful, see? With the halo. And the halo was made of a round plastic plywood.
Right.
And with all the sequence of gold colored, yellow colored, silver colored, red colored, and so on. With hello, what called bands of sequence, different colored sequence, were pasted on that. And when it revolves, it looked very much nice, see, with the hello. And then, when the first, after at the end of the introductory verse, introductory song, and then the Mara. Have you heard of Mara?
Yes.
Manat. Yeah. Those are just as you can say his, you can say Buddha's own what do you call imagination.
Right.
About doing this or that, doing right thing or wrong thing, something is like that. You see.
Right.
But it was like a legend. It turned into legend. At that time, the Mara with six hands on the back of the elephant appeared with his demons and so many. See? Oh, I also use a stage.
Right.
Oh, I copied that from the visiting Australia, Marionette Theatre of Australia.
Really? They came here that early?
1965.
Wow.
That troop came here. At that time, they staged a sort of little fella painting. The director's name was Peter Scriven, but an Aboriginal boy with who met animals and Australian both animals and all that. I forgot the story.
I'm amazed you remember so many names.
No, and then they used a stage called overhead press. Overhead press.
Yeah.
Made completely of aluminium.
Right.
Aluminium could be made to as strong as steel. Steel, right. You see.
Yeah.
So they use an overhead press.
Yeah.
I use the same. I copied that, and the German returning architect, he designed and built the overhead press for me. So, according to our stage techniques, the stage was here. The spots were used in front.
Yeah.
The stage was here.
Yeah.
And then the stage, you have to climb up there from the to side ladders.
Yeah.
Or about 20 could go on top of that.
Goodness.
About 20 manipulators and
squash.
Vocalists, they all could climb up that stage, you see. And then the right beneath the stage, overhead bridge was this height. And there's a puppet stage, about only 1 foot high. A puppet stage was consisted of puppet boxes.
Right.
About thickness, about one and a half feet.
Yeah.
1.5 feet. And they were laid in front of that stage. That served as the puppet stage, you see?
Yeah.
And then for the puppet stage, there were rows of overhead
lights
and side lights and the foot lights, and also the two very big, we call as hollow spots. See? They were used very about 15 yards from the above the stage, proscenium. Stage opening, the two men, they operated the follow spot. Very, very brilliant, very, very strong, strong follows.
Yeah.
And then, after the end of the introductory verse, and the first verse, and then the Maharaj and his followers came, and he demanded the Buddha to leave the throne and to leave, because the when the banyan tree was very young and when the throne was built appeared, he also aimed to be a Buddha. He also wished to be a bitter Buddha, and he wanted rivals, you see. So he demanded the Buddha to leave the scene, see? And then all his demons followed him. And I received Aboriginal with a big head, which Mr. Scriven gave to me as a share present, see? He looked funny, see? And terrible to the youngsters, young boys, who were close to the stage, you see? they were afraid, and they also wished they looked funny. It looked funny to them, see. Whenever the puppet jumped towards them, near them, they were. I used that puppet very effective. See?
So you had your own puppet troupe from 65.
No. I was wrong in mentioning that.
Yeah.
My puppet troupe was formed in, actually, in 1966.
66.
My memory was sometimes very bad. See?
Seems pretty good to me.
Yes. And then, after the second verse, we call it Vasundhari, the god of the earth, I think. God of the earth and the sea, he appeared with the music,
yeah,
the appropriate music, and he asked Mana to withdraw, but he refused. He said the same dialogue, see, that he also wished to be the Buddha, a god. And he said that the god of the earth, he said, no, the banyan tree and the throne appeared because of the Buddha's, his virtue of his past existences. They appeared out of nowhere. So you must go. But Manat refused. And then I forgot to mention that at the stage immediately underneath the stage, the projectors were used, you see.
Right.
Projectors, they're still projectors as well as moving projectors. Moving means moving clouds and moving sceneries, and
right,
you see. So after beginning of that opera, you can say this item, just a scene of forest was shown, you see, and the stage underneath, immediately underneath that stage, the projectors were placed.
Yeah.
And then with the lighting, of separate lighting, or overhead lighting, with three colors, white, red, and blue, and the backdrops, which could be dropped and then raised. They were about eight different backdrop sceneries.
Right.
They were used. Huh? They were being small compared to the real things. They could be raised and lowered.
Yeah.
Easily. So for those backdrops, separate lighting system was used. And then at the back of the stage, there was a white screen. You call it cyclorama, I'm not sure. Cyclorama also, after the end of the third verse, all the Maharas and his followers, there was a ultraviolet tubes.
Right.
A long cloth with waves, what rays, you see? And the ultraviolet tubes make it very
like
natural, you see,
yeah,
like
yeah.
a sea.
Yeah.
And then on the background, white background, projection of a forest slowly disappeared, and the water waves were shown, you see, something like this.
Yeah. It's all improvisation.
Yes, yes. And then all not traditional. the Maharaj and his hoodie, all they, let us say, they were washed away.
Right.
They were washed away. And also the god of the earth also vanished slowly.
Why?
No more, not necessary for him to stay there. Because after his ultimatum, they all disappeared, you see. And the water all were flooded, all were, the whole scene was flooded. The water coming up, and then all disappeared. And then the cutting was lower.
Curtain comes down.
Yeah, cutting lower. And then I used three Christmas lights at the back. They were very dim, you see. Very dim. Because it could, destroy the effect of the projection
yeah.
on the white screen. So where the cutting was slowly raised, and you can see that so many devas, see devas coming down from the above, and then the kings and his queens and princess and princess, his daughter and his so on, and then further to the right, ministers coming in, and the general, they are coming slowly. And then they take their places and they make their gesture of obeisance.
Yeah.
And then three candles were placed on the at that time, before that scene, three candles, two wires were
bound together.
You might bear the heat a little.
Yeah.
they were attached by heat to the wires, two copper wires
yeah.
that they were attached. And then at the top, little of the wax was removed.
This is your electrical ability.
Making a little pool.
Right.
A little pool, see?
Yeah.
So before that scene, one stage hand, he put a little of the with that petroleum into the cavities, into very small cavities,
yeah, yeah.
And there were fuses,
yeah,
fuses,
yeah,
joining
the different
two electrodes,
yeah,
and then hold down, that's why Piago, we pray to the Lord Buddha, and at the center. Candle, light up.
Magic.
Little bit of magic, you see, electrical magic, and then with the Dhamma law, we pay respect to the Buddha's law, second one. But at that time, the puppet of the celestial nut, celestial spirit. He somehow it appeared that he lighted the candles with him.
It made it look like he'd done.
Yes. But the three candles and then Sangha, the monk order, the Sangha they lighted. Yeah? Oh, it was a very, very beautiful scene.
You remember it so vividly, don't you?
Yeah. So When we recited something like that, religious verse, and then when the verse was over, the cutting was lower, and all were removed, you see. At that time, the male dancer and the female dancer, they danced. Firstly, the male dancer tried to kiss the one. The female dancer, like this. And then, second time, the song was sung, a very lively song written by the same composer. Second time, the prince, the female dancer, put his arms forward, and the female dancer just jumped backwards on him, and he.
And is that the end?
That is the end. So, this number was not traditional. Just a.
And you wrote that? Did you?
No, not like written, but oh, brother of that Sri Dai Nyo, Sri Dai Mien, he suggested some theatrical troupe did that one before.
So tell me about the troupe and why you stopped it.
No. And then, second year, we call it dance drama, or you can say opera. In the Bible, we used to call it opera. Yeah. T-A, not R-A. after that, Ubensis to the Buddha scene, traditional, what you call, on the first night, the spirit put rest, dance marionette of the spirit put rest was performed. It is a traditional one. On the first night. On the successive nights, the dance is called, what's called, dance of the handmaiden, palace maiden, on the very short. Traditionally speaking, they last about an hour, at least half an hour.
Yeah.
But we try to minimize the duration. And then, traditionally speaking, we stage the Himavanta or Himalaya forest scene. Forest. I don't know, my teeth are missing. Forest scene.
You see? Yeah, correct.
The first one is Dance of the Horse. Do you want to hear the traditional beliefs about that?
Yeah.
According to the Burmese Myanmar belief, the first to appear is in the universe is a constellation of the horse, the horse's head, Aswani, Atavadi in Burmese way.
Yeah.
Aswani was the first creation of the universe. So, the dance of the horse. And then the scene of Himalaya, Himavanta, in Myanmar way we pronounce Himavanta forest scene. The other creatures are the dancers of the monkey is the second appear. He dance, you see. And that
is that like Ramayana or
no, not connected to the Ramayana. And it is purely the Burmese belief of universe or something like that. Borrowed from Hindus, I think. Borrowed much from the
Ramayana.
No, Ramayana.
Also borrow from the Indians.
No. Only the dance of the, after the dance of the horse, dance of the monkey. And sometimes, and then the two demons.
Demons, yes.
Two demons, dance of the two demons. They dance, they greeted each other, and then they looked, and in the four directions, whether the enemies were around or something like that. And then they greeted each other and they danced. And then they fought. And when their fighting scene was over, they vanished. big thing because they could jump long distances. They could jump to a great height.
See? With magic, right?
Yeah. And then horse, monkey, the two demons. And then the Garuda and the dragon. They appeared. And they fought. And then finally, Garuda was always the winner. He jumped on the serpent, dragon, and they finished. Sometimes he carried the serpent like this and finished.
And how long is the whole show?
The whole night.
The whole night?
The whole night's fair.
For hours?
So many. Usually, a show, a dramatic or a puppet show began usually at 9:30. At earliest, 9. In those days, 9 or 9:30.
Right.
And ended up at 6 and early in the morning.
In the morning, all through
the night. It is a must for all dramatic.
So that's been your life?
Yes. About 8 years I spent that life.
And do people pay to come to it?
Yeah. We have theatrical contractors.
Right.
They hired us. They did the selling of the admission of tickets.
Yeah.
And the selling of the for the match. You see?
Right.
Match place on
and
the already
food
and also the selling of tickets for the folding chairs.
Right.
At the back of the theater. And also they sold tickets for the admission tickets for the adults and for the children. That is the business, see? They hired us, they paid us at the price agreed upon by them and by us. And then sometimes we perform ourselves, myself. I asked some members of the troupe, my troupe, to do the selling, and to admit self spectators into the hall theater.
Like Usher, we call it.
Usher in the spectators. Yeah. Not really the most of our theaters, so-called theaters, were all made of bamboo and
thatch. Right. Temporary.
And temporary structures, you see. So they were built with thatch for the roofing. But usually the stage.
And were you performing like 7 nights a week or 6 nights a week? Or
usually at a town, about at least three nights at a town.
In a row?
Yes.
You must be exhausted.
No, yes.
Exhausted if you're doing it.
Yes, really exhausted for you, I think, for us.
Not for you, because you love it.
Yes, because
it was our
livelihood.
Yeah. Right? So was it enough for you you obviously got married, and was it enough for you to provide, food for
yes,
the family?
Yes, quite.
It was quite, good.
Quite paying.
Right.
Not so much.
Yeah, but comfortable.
Yes.
And why did you stop it?
And then, frankly, I knew how to make people like my shows. Some writers, they claimed that it was already dying, that puppet theater was also in a also dying, you see, in a very, not only in a steep decline, they believed, like Dr. Tiao, he wrote in the Burmese drama that puppet theater was not already dying, you see. Not in the in those days. Already there was a one puppet troupe by the name of Shevo Demont's troupe in Mandalay, and two in Yangon, most famous and most famous troops are, what you call, the one in Yangon, Rangoon is called Pongnamyan Choi, and my troop.
Yeah.
They were doing fine, very well. They were touring almost the length and breadth of
our. What was the name of your troop?
The Kong Ao. The Kong means Yangon,
yeah,
in old sense.
Yeah.
Ao means successful.
Okay.
Frankly speaking, we must consult astrologer or yeah.
Choice of the name.
Who knew
yeah.
lot about astrology.
Yeah.
We must consult whether the name was appropriate for the troop or for me or for my troop or not. I did not consult. The goal of astrologically speaking is not spelled zero. I did not consult any astrologer or astrologer who knew who was well versed in astrology. No. I did not consult any of my friends.
Well, it sounds like you didn't need it.
No.
It still went well.
No. It was really, but I was crazy. I was crazy because about half of the proceeds obtained for a year, was meant for my family.
Yes.
Other half, sometimes more, I spent for the next year's innovations.
Right.
So many.
Making the sets and things like that.
So
you stopped because it became no longer economic?
No, not economically speaking. I was not, sometimes I was crazy. I spent a lot.
Okay, so you didn't run it very well as a business.
No, I did not know how to make money. I knew how to make the people like my shows.
Yeah.
I must tell you that sometimes the life, even the big live theatrical companies, they were afraid of my show. You see?
I'm sure.
Really. Sometimes, let us say, Macquarie, there was a very big town in the yeah. Macquarie division.
Yeah.
There was a famous Macquarie Pagoda Festival, and I performed with about three live dramatic troops, and they were afraid of me. Because people were really liked my shows.
Yes.
They were afraid of me.
How many people did you employ in
about 40.
40 about people? 40. Full time.
And I used 3-ton lorries, or at least 3-ton, 2 lorries. Or 5-ton is better. Because one lorry is for the upper personnel. For the other lorries, I also use a piano for the modern play. For the modern play, I use a modern band with a piano. One violinist for the.
So they carried a piano.
Yes.
To every.
Yeah. Piano, because. For tragic scenes, that this one is necessary.
Right.
Violin is necessary.
But you're amending Burmese with Western music.
Yes.
Yeah. Using Western music.
Yes. Yes. And then piano, violin, one trumpeter, one clarinetist.
So are these people all full time working for?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Full time?
Not really full time. They were paid on nightly basis.
Yes, but they have to travel around with you when you go away.
Then the drummer. Five musicians, modern musicians were used.
Right.
And about 7 traditional musicians. They travel with another lord.
Right.
With their instruments, with the traditional instruments, and also the piano, as well as a generator.
Generator, yeah, because you're doing the villages.
It was necessary for
us. Yeah, sure.
Sometimes we performed at a
village
or at a village or a pagoda festival without electricity.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So we use 2 lorries, 3-ton lorry, or 5-ton is better.
This is a big business.
Big, very big business.
And so you stopped because of...
Firstly, I got fed up with my business.
Okay.
Very, very tiring business. Yeah. Tiring job. And also, although I knew how to make, like my puppet show, I did not know how to make money.
Right, so it was economic training.
To spend too much for the next year.
Right.
Coming year.
And meanwhile, you had children?
Yes.
You married?
23, yeah.
And was your wife supportive of this strange life?
She helped me for making of costumes for my puppet. She was a lovely lady.
Is she still with us?
No. She died in 2015.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
And children? How many children?
Children, 3. Biggest and eldest and youngest, they were girls.
Right.
The present one is a boy. The youngest one died many years ago.
The youngest girl.
Yeah.
So there's a daughter, eldest daughter, and then a son.
Eldest and youngest are the daughters. The middle one is the present one. He is a son.
So who's left with you now, the son and the daughter?
Only I live with my son.
Okay, but there's a daughter too.
No, the eldest one is, she lived with her husband and her.
And where is she? In Yangon?
Okay.
So when you stopped I'm just looking for the year you stopped doing the troop.
I think 1973.
Okay. So what have you, there's been many years since 1973, so...
1973, I began to write. I began to write articles in both English and Myanmar, which appeared in the newspapers and magazines.
What did you write on?
On Myanmar Performing Arts.
Myanmar Performing Arts.
Let's see, I wrote mostly in English.
Is there a reason?
Firstly, I wrote on the conventions of the Myanmar Puppet Theatre, and then the history of the Myanmar Puppet Theatre, and then also the live theatre. So many articles.
So this is preserving the history
for
the country.
Yes.
Is there any puppet troupe left?
No, very, very unfortunately, no really seriously formed puppet troupes exist no more. No more exist.
It's gone.
No.
That's very sad for the country.
Only live dramatic troupes, they will perform the traditional play. No. No more.
No more either?
No. Very, very... it's a shameful situation. Not only for the live theatre, for the country, for our culture, no. By about 1970, one actor, he began with all night item called stage show. All the modern stuff. They sang modern songs based on international songs, American songs, you see. At that time, they performed something like break dance, like Michael Jackson. Very often, very shameful thing. Very bad thing, I must confess. And then they believed that the performance of the duet dances, Napadwa, the item of duet songs and dances was quite, what you call, beautiful for them to preserve the tradition. Only the dancers, singing and dancers of the male and female dancers singing, and then the clowning of the comedians that took place for about 2-3 hours. Very bad thing for our country.
Do you think it's because of, you know, TV and things like that, or is it?
Actually, no. There's a Mama saying that the people they accepted what they gave them, and they ate what they gave them. Pera Uju means they accepted what we gave them. Juera Sa, they ate what they provided them. But they just spoiled, they just destroyed the tradition.
But who's responsible? You're not, it's not the governments that destroyed it. It's
No. They could not do, they could not control them. The former military junta governments, they did not have the right to control them.
Did they control them?
No, they could not. They could not.
But they didn't try.
No. They just believed that it was not their duty to.
Oh, so you mean they didn't support?
They did not support. They did not exercise some sort of control. They did not try to control.
Right, because the shows are not political, are they?
No. So. Firstly, they showed the operas, the ones based on fiction, musical dramas, you can say musical dramas, operas, and then they showed the life, the modern plays based on contemporary life, and then the duet. Oh, that is all. It just destroyed. One actor, he appeared, and he did not try to respect the tradition. He just destroyed. And then the successive young fellows appeared. They all followed his example. And the ones in Mandalay, they even did not care for the traditional play at all. It's a sad thing.
Very bad thing. Because your puppets are distinctive in Southeast Asia, aren't they? Or distinctive for your country?
No. I just disbanded my troop in about 1973. I was not, what do you call, not my responsibility.
No.
The live showman, live theatrical troops, they were responsible.
So since 1973, you've just concentrated on writing and not full time employee or
no.
It's followed, still following your passion.
Yes.
I can see with the way you talk, you clearly after all these years feel so passionate about.
And then I wrote and wrote.
And you've won a number of awards for your books, right?
That was. Only in 2011, And let me tell you about my visit to the foreign countries. In 1984, the Ministry of Culture sent a government to government basis, you see. But there was a NGO called German Institute of Puppetry in Bochum.
Yes.
Bochum in Germany, at that time, western part of Germany. Yeah. At that time, the director general's name was Dr. Jürgen Klunder. He invited West German government, on behalf of his institute, extended an invitation to the Ministry of Culture. And under the Ministry of sponsorship of the Ministry of Culture, a 15-member marionette troupe was sent to Germany, headed by the director of the Dance and Drama Division of the Ministry of Culture.
Right.
We were outsiders. At that time, only two puppeteers were employed by the department, two manipulators. So we were outsiders, but I was responsible for choosing the play and directing the play about based on a chataka, minor chataka, and about a king who while out hunting in the forest, he met a demon who tried to kill him and eat him, but he promised him to send one man and one bowl of eatables to him daily. And what the king did was, as his prison was full of convicts, he sent one to eat every day. He sent one man to him to be eaten by that. So
the demon.
The demon agreed to his proposal. Suddenly, slowly, gradually, the prison ran out of convicts. No more prisoners. So the king ordered the ministers to declare with a stroke of a timber gong, you see, to declare that to anyone wishing to go to that demon and also take a bowl of eatables to him will be offered 1,000 chats. And that he went with his comb strikers. He declared that anyone wishing to go to the waiting the demon will be offered 1,000 chats. In those days, about 10 million.
A lot of money.
So at that time, there was a young man who was a woodcutter. He agreed because he was looking after his old mother, you see. So he wished to make his mother, complete, you see.
Yeah.
Provide him with so many. So he did not know that there was a demon. Just sending to that someone, you see. So he agreed. And then the mayor gave him the money. At that moment, his mother came in. "My son, have you not heard of a demon, ogre, the guardian of the banyan tree, big tree, who ate human beings. Don't you know about that story? No, he didn't. And then, upon learning the story from his mother, he gave back the bag of money to the mayor. All done by string, you see? Trick stringing, it is called. It was called trick stringing, you see? One mayor giving the bag of money to the hero.
Yeah.
And then the bag of money is in his hand. And then dropping on the floor, on the earth, the mayor giving, taking this back, and he tortured him. Tortured him.
Who tortured who?
The mayor. At a scene of tragedy, you see.
Yeah.
Or our theatre goers, they are fond of tear jerkers. No? They were fond of mojins or weeping songs. Always sung in a very
sad
mood. And after the ending of the song, the orchestra plays appropriate music.
But what's the message in this story?
Let me tell you after the complete finishing of my story. So the hero was beaten by the mayor, and he was forced to go to there, to the demon. And there the demon, he tried to kill him, but he recited so many stanzas on the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and he tried to kill him without success. Something like this, no? The religious theme, you see. And demon asked him what was the matter, what powers he possessed. Oh, he replied that I only believed in the Buddha and his Dhamma teachings and his monk order of monks only. No, at that time. And then the demon carried him to the king, you see, carried him to the palace of the king, and there the king was greatly surprised, you see, and surprised, and he, the hero, a Buddha to be, the Bodhisattva, he taught the king not to commit any crimes or any wrongdoing, but to believe in the three gems, you see. And the king was, his sin, he saw his own sin, he begged that the hero to forgive him. And then the demon went out and gave him a very big bowl of gold, golden bowl, see? And he was, in that way the story ends happily, you see? The theme was quite clear, you see? The theme was to believe in the Buddha, his teachings and his, the monks, you see? So that is the theme of the religious theme of the story. So we performed that play in Germany, and we spent nearly a month in Germany, western part of Germany. At that time, two Germanys were not reunited again. So we gave 15 performances.
Sorry, were you in East Germany?
No, Western.
You're West Germany.
That the German Institute of Puppetry, the office headquarters, was situated in Bochum.
Okay.
I don't know how to pronounce.
I don't know the city.
B-O-C-H-U-M.
Okay.
Bokum or Bokum. So we spent nearly a month in Western Germany, and we gave 15 performances in 13 cities.
Exhausting.
Not so big cities like Frankfurt or Bonn, or at the time the capital of West Germany was Bonn, you see?
Yeah.
Not Bonn. So we were very glad.
and the people, was it done in English or done in Burmese or
no,
done
no,
in those?
Only in Burmese we
and how did you explain it to the people with
no,
some
no,
sort
we
of
just distributed our
programs. Okay.
To the spectators.
Yeah. And I presume you didn't go from 9:30 at night till 7 in the morning.
No, only about a 1.5 hour,
yeah,
I think, performance. But while during that tragic scene, when the mayor was torturing the hero and his mother, I was free at that time. I was not on the stage, on the bridge, you see, puppet bridge. I peeped to the, I opened a little of the cutting and saw that there was the spectators. You see, quite effective. Because old men and old women, they were tears.
Goodness.
Really. Quite effective, our way of, our presentation.
Communicating that.
Our performance the traditional drama. And the young men, young men and young women, they were also sad. They looked sad, you see, quite affected. Because the singing of the Mo Jin is very, some people, some writers, some authors, they blame the theatrical, you see, how do you say, performing artists.
Yes. Yes.
Actors and actors for singing so much of the Ngo Jins, you see. So much of the weeping songs or what you call wailing songs, you see. Because they believe that it makes the people, that their people's mentality to be, what you call, pessimistic, and also to make their characters weak. So many authors, so many writers, they blame the theatrical sector. But they are, the spectators also wish to hear how the Mo Jins were sung by the leading actors and actresses. That was a fact. They were sung very, you as an actor may sing in a one way. I may sing in another way. Please let me sing one song. No? That was done by Shibote Monk of Mandalay when he came to Yangon and performed in here. At that time there was no theater, just open air theater.
Yeah.
At that time, the government was trying to revive the puppet theater, and two puppet troops from Mandalay came here. One was led by Chebo Tema, the one was sponsored by Ludu Dharma, the famous authoress of Mandalay. She provided financial assistance, and she provided so many things. And that at that time, Xia Zhouji Wu Teng Han, the famous writer.
Yeah.
He was a well versed in Western play drama also. He directed, actually fed. He aided the troops. And that time, in the play, a prince came back from Taxila, in present Pakistan, the University Kingdom, you see. He came, he passed through a forest with his two attendants, the clowns. In the forest, in a part of the forest, there was only a very big tree, very long, very of like long height, bearing on top of it a very single fruit, you see, a very beautiful fruit. And the two attendants, they climbed up the tree, fetched it, and gave it to the prince. The prince ate it with much relish. You can find it in the book. And he found it very delicious. The prince was very tasty for him. And then, after a few moments, he felt that his whole body was on fire. And then he sang a mojan.
This is the one you're going to sing? Okay.
Yeah. About his story going to Saitaxila and going there to learn 18 manly arts, going back from that, having completed his studies, going back, and then he is now in trouble. Pinyara Athara Gola Vyam. Yinzawa no machaya o raja bhate dekazo. Dong-dong. Yinzawa no machaya raja bhate dekazo. Nebo no matau thami raja. Deke yago no ayau pa bhipo. So, Pian, oh, I know, children. I'm a late man, no, and then the orchestra plays an appropriate postlude.
You are an amazing man.
You see, this is old form of singing of a mojan. Yeah. Professor Luce once told me that you Burmese people usually wept, all were in tears, men and women in tears, after singing a mojan, after hearing a mojan sung by the leading actor or actress. And then the orchestra played a postlude. It is called postlude, you see, immediately after the song. And then you were crying, you were weeping, you all are weeping. But the way we hear the music, the Mojan side, we use you all wish you cry, but we used to dance. Professor Luce told me like that. Because only by traditional, traditional conventions or dramatic practices, we hear mojans as a very touching, very tragic, and we feel sorry, and we sometimes if your heart is soft,
emotional.
If you are a soft man, soft person, you may cry, you see. You may weep like this.
You are a remarkable man,
Remarkable man in one way, but a very, very bad man in other sense.
Well, I'm honored to have met you. I thank you so much for your time. And I hope I can do justice to putting this into a podcast.